This is Mae Brussel. This is part two of broadcast number 711, World Watchers, July the 22nd, 1985. I'm going to be quoting, for the most part, from Wiesenthal's own book, The Murderers Among Us. It was published in 1967, and as I say, it indicates his special treatment by the SS, his friendship with Nazis, and in the OS, in the SS, not the O. That came in 1945. And most of this material will be from that book of his. I listed the favors that he got from top Nazis and his friends, and I'll put some of those names on the printed sheet that accompanies this broadcast. You will get it if you subscribe to the tape, and you can send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93922, if you want further information or to see these names written down so you can study them. In the book, The Murders Among Us, the author said that Wiesenthal was saved from a series of near miracles. He referred to them as near miracles, as he survived more than 12 concentration camps. We won't get through 12 in this half hour, but we'll do as many as we can. And they were everywhere from Poland to Austria. And most of his relatives, including his mother, was exterminated. Now, his background was such that he had reason to have no great love affair for the Russians or the Germans, of course. And yet, when the war is over, or as it's winding down, he's fleeing with the SS to Germany. Just a brief background of where he was located in the cities, so that you understand the political position he was in or where his mindset was. He was brought up in a town called Busitz, B-U-C-Z-I-C-Z, in Poland. His father was in the Austrian army. He was killed in the war in 1915. The town began to be taken over by the Tsar's army. Before the revolution, they had moved in, and the Cossacks moved in. And into this town of Busitz, were a lot of frightened Jews. The Cossacks were the Tsar's horsemen who had come into town. They had small, fast horses, and they'd plow down and have what they called were pogroms, P-O-G-R-O-M-S, where they would tear into town, beat up the Jews, destroy their stores, kill them, sometimes slice them open. And many of you saw the play Fiddler on the Roof at the time of the wedding, when the Cossacks come and there's a pogrom. Well, that's the kind of town that Simon Wiesenthal grew up in, that was sometimes taken over by the Tsar's Cossacks. Now, Jack Ruby, in 1964, told members of the Warren Commission, including Gerald Ford and Earl Warren, that because of what he did and the people who used him, and he was referring to the John Birch Society and H.L. Hunt and that gang, that we would have pogroms in this country, similar to what the Cossacks and the Tsars had in Russia, where his family came from. Interestingly enough, H.L. Hunt and Clint Murchison were setting up death squads for America, death squads, and began to work with the Minutemen, had used the Minutemen in the role of killing John Kennedy, particularly, and Martin Luther King, working with the Nazis. And today, Reverend Gale, as part of the identity movement and part of the survivalists and the preacher for these movements, Richard Butler up in Idaho, the friend of Manfred Roeder, in jail in Germany, leaking the Mengele story. They have tape cassettes on the air on how to kill Jews today and how to cut their throats. Those traditions were brought over from the Cossacks. And so Wiesenthal lived in an area with no love for the Russians, as the Russians. And then many of the people left his home and went to Galicia in Germany and then back to the hometown. At the end of the war in 1915, the armistice came. His mother and brother went back to their hometown. They moved first to Vienna, the capital of the Habsburg monarchy. He went to school there and lived in Galicia. And in 1917, after the revolution, the Russians retreated from Galicia, where he was living, and the Jews returned there. So he was living there happily, I guess, in his hometown. The Russian Revolution had taken place. Now, all of a sudden, this Western Ukrainian Republic becomes violent again. And this is the time period in 1920 where the Polish were fighting the Bolsheviks because Herbert Hoover was taking the money from Congress. He had wanted $55 million plus more that he put into Vaslov's army, which was the White Russians. So the Poles were becoming armed to fight the Russians who had had the revolution. So he was living in the middle of his own country, fighting with the Vaslov's army, the White Czarists, opposing the new revolution in Russia. So from this period on, there were unending wars that were really the precursor of World War II, and we'll begin our World War III also, where the Poles armed are fighting the Russians trying to stop the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks moved into his hometown various times and pulled in the bourgeois, asked them to put up money for them. They turned their gymnastic hall into stables for the horses. And then the Ukrainian cavalry opposed, and that was made up of the former Cossacks who had the pogroms. So the Ukrainians were the right Russian czarists who tore into town with pogroms, who Wiesenthal then sides with that element of the Ukrainian, and they're the former Cossacks who were killing and cutting up the Jews, raping, plundering, and murdering. And they became part of Mr. Bandera's army. And in the book, The Belarus's Secret by John Loftus, you get a picture of this scene. Out of the Ukrainian group came people like Lev Dobryansky, a cabinet position as ambassador to Bahamas under Ronald Reagan. His daughter, Paula Dobryansky, is in the National Security Council. Wiesenthal became friendly to the former Cossacks who were the pogrom people, that gave the pogrom, and sided with the Germans and the Ukrainians against the Russians. When he has a choice later, he does that. Now, these were the people that burned down the Jewish homes and cut them up, I said, and did all those various things. Now, he moved away to the mountains, the Carpathian Mountains, in 1925. His mother remarried, and then her husband was sent during the war. He was sent to Siberia, to a prison camp where he was killed. Now, evidently, the family was against the Bolsheviks, so as they came over, Wiesenthal's family were considered on the enemy list. His stepfather was sent away. In 1936, he married a woman named Sila, C-Y-L-A, Sila Mueller. He'd gone to Prague and studied. He lived in Czechoslovakia and studied architecture. In 1936, he got married and opened an architectural office in 1936. In 1939, the Germans and the Russians had a non-aggression pact where they both agreed they would partition Poland. And Simon Wiesenthal, of course, was living in Poland. So the Germans invaded in September 1939, September the 1st, their blitzkrieg into Poland from the west side, and the Russians went into Poland from the east. Again, just putting the mindset of Wiesenthal of where he was choosing, say, the Russians from one side and the Germans from the other, and he lived in a town called Lwow, L-W-O-W. And in middle of September of 1939, the Russians went into Lwow, and Wiesenthal was, in quotes, liberated by the Germans at that time. But then the Russian security came, the NKVD, and arrested many of the Jews. As I say, took his stepfather to Siberia where he died, took his stepbrother was arrested and shot in 1941. Now, he loses his stepfather and his stepbrother to the Russians. He loses his mother and all of his family to the Nazi ovens and extermination camps, but he sides with the Germans, even though they did millions and millions of murders because of Jews. He was Jewish, but he survives very well as a Jew, and the SS, Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, are kindly towards him. Now, I started listing the favors of Simon Wiesenthal. There's over 25 different favors that he got from the time he was out of architectural school until he begins to build these multi-million dollar buildings in the United States. $30 million just passed last week. The goal is $100 million for his institute in Washington, and he has a goal of $20 million in Beverly Hills. So we have a long route between here and Roxbury Drive in Beverly Hills or Washington. But the very first paper began that when the Russians were in town, they had passport number 11 for certain people. This is before the Nazis arrived, that Jews became subhuman, not subhuman like the Nazis, but underprivileged, second-class citizens. They couldn't live in larger cities. They couldn't live near certain borders. They couldn't have bank accounts. They couldn't have certain jobs. But Wiesenthal was able, according to him, he bribed. But the Russians were nice enough, the NKVD, he got what you call a regular passport, starting different than any other Jew. So this is, even when the Russians are there, he has some charisma or whatever it is, he gets a special passport, three, one for himself, one for his wife, and one for his mother. So a few months later, all the Jews who had this other passport were deported to Siberia in this particular town, and most of them died. They weren't trusted by the Russians, and evidently they were siding with the Cossacks and Ukrainians that moved into their area. But he managed to stay alive and worked in town in Lao, and his mother and wife were there. The other Jews were deported. So that was the first favor, special passports, three of them, and the others were deported. Now, June 22nd, 1941, this is 22 months after the non-aggression pact, Germany begins to invade Russia. They had a hold off to each take half of Poland, but Germany is going to go for Russia as of June 22nd, 1941. And June the 30th, 1941, the town of Lwów, L-W-O-W, Poland, where Wiesenthal lives with his wife and mother, is invaded by the Germans, and the Russians retreat 8 days later. The Germans invade it, and the first German uniforms are on the street. The Ukrainian troops had been taken out of their area to, when they fled the Soviet Union, when the Bolsheviks came in, they went to Germany, and they were trained by the German army during this period of rearmament of Germany, and they celebrated Lwów with a traditional pogrom. What they used to do as Cossacks working for the Tsar, they were sent to Western Europe, trained by the German army, so they came in and pulled again one of these pogroms where over 6,000 Jews were killed in 3 days. Some of the remaining Jews of his hometown had been murdered within 3 days. Now, keep in mind that Wiesenthal is going to be friendly with these people. These are the people he's going to side with through the war, and particularly as the war is winding down, they're the ones that do him favors. So the second favor he receives, the first is to get special working papers to stay in town that he and his wife and mother have, for what other reason, a regular passport. And the next favor is that the pogrom comes and the Jews are wiped out, but his family isn't touched. He's all right and survives the mass killings and goes on to greater territory with a few hardships, I admit. Now, July the 6th, 1941, Simon Wiesenthal is hiding in the cellar of a house. He's playing chess with a friend of his. He only uses the last names in his book. Everything is a last name. There's very few first names, which is interesting. He doesn't give them that. He plays with a man named Gross. At 4 o'clock, the Ukrainians come and arrest him. Those are the Ukrainians trained in Germany, the German troops that have invaded Poland. And a lot of them came from his hometown. And one of the men spoke Yiddish with him, and he was taken to Brigida prison. That's his first prison, B-R-I-G-I-D-K-A prison, and 40 lawyers and doctors and teachers and engineers in the courtyard of the prison. And the Jews are forming a line against a wall in a long row in the prison. This is page 26. All of this is out of his book, and I'll tell you when it's from the Washington Post, but this chronology, I prefer to use his own book. He's facing a wall, and they're told to cross their arms and put their hands behind their neck. And there's an empty crate next to each person. A person, a crate, a person in crate, 40 of them. In the center of the area, the courtyard, is a large table with vodka bottles and sausage and guns and ammunition. And the Ukrainians would shoot each man in the neck as they went down the line. And then two Ukrainians would pick them up and throw the bodies in the crates. And they were shouting and crying. And they get close to Wiesenthal. And suddenly the Ukrainian voice says, "Enough, enough. We've got to go to evening mass." And the shooting stops. So Wiesenthal is protected. Now, this happens quite a few times to him. the sky falls, the lightning comes, or whatever. He says there were 20 Jews left, and they went down to the floor, slept on the floor of the prison. And he wakes up, and a man says, "Mr. Wiesenthal, what are you doing here?" And the man was Mr. Bodnar, a former construction person he knew, B-O-D-N-A-R. He had a armband of the Ukrainian Auxiliary Police and also a civilian suit. He said, "I've got to get you out of here tonight." So he arranged that Wiesenthal and Gross could escape. And so that is the third favor. It actually is the one where they're not shot in the firing squad, but then somebody comes and he's allowed to escape, an old buddy. And I don't believe when the Germans went into town, the accounts of what they did in that town, I'll read later, but I'm just talking about Simon Wiesenthal now, that Wiesenthal and Gross were able to escape. He said, "I'll tell them that you're Russian spies, and I'll beat you up a little, and then you run on home." And he did lose two teeth. They knocked him up a little, and he ran home to his wife and mother. Now, the Germans have occupied that town in Lau, August 1941, and they made a statement and order. All Jews must move to the ghetto, give up their apartments. An SS man comes to his apartment where Wiesenthal and his wife live, and an hour later, Wiesenthal is out, and then he's taken to Janowski prison. This is his second prison in the town of Lau, at the Janowska. Now, Simon Wiesenthal and his wife, Sila, are sent from Janowski concentration camp to a forced labor camp. This is their third settlement. And this camp is served by the Eastern Railroad, the Ostbahn Repair Works Eastern Railroad. And the Germans are planning an offensive into the Soviet Union, so this railroad is important for the supplies, the supply line. It's kept open. And if you've ever seen a map of Poland with the concentration camps throughout Poland, this was very important. Now, Wiesenthal's wife worked in the locomotive workshop. She polished brass, and as I mentioned last week, he painted swastikas and eagle shields on Russian locomotives that were captured, and he became the head sign painter. He was promoted to that. Now, he meets another pal, a man who likes him, where he's painting his swastikas. His name is Heinrich Guenthardt, G-U-E-N-T-H-E-R-T. And he says, "Your hands are cold, they're blue, you shouldn't paint outside." So the next favor is that Guenthardt moves him inside, promotes his job, and he asks Wiesenthal what his education was, because the educated are being shipped off as the bourgeoisie, and he lies, and his friend at the camp there who hires him says, "Well, you can survive." And the next favor is that he is allowed to survive. Intelligent Jews were given the priority to be exterminated, according to Wiesenthal. They didn't want these people that are too smart around, but they said, "You can stay here," and he stayed the equivalent of, he acted as if he'd gone to trade school. They knew he was different, but he impressed them, and they were impressed with him. So he became a technician and a draftsman at the railroad yard, the Ostbahn, where all the people being shipped to the concentration camps, the animal herds, being packed into cars. He, OSTBHN Repair Works, Eastern Railroad, he stayed there as a technician and draftsman, and is even there when his mother is put on the train that goes off to the concentration camps. It's similar to that Mr. Berkowitz that worked for Joseph Mengele. And he said, "You can here have a pass." That day he sees his mother going off to the ovens. He lets him have the day off to see Mom go off to the ovens, and then goes back to Mengele to be his valet. Well, Wiesenthal is at the train works, working there and painting a swastika. And then it jumps, this story jumps to favor number five or six, whichever way you want to list it. He says the living conditions were bearable there. And at this time period, he goes into 1942. Now, it's later into the war. January the 20th, 1942, there is the Wannsee Conference, W-A-N-N-S-E-E Conference, where Reinhard Heydrich meets with 15 top Nazis, including Adolf Eichmann, who proposes they get together what is the final solution of the Jewish problem, to deport to the East, and forced labor, the mass executions, the mass murders, Adolf Eichmann was in charge of that, the Jewish problem, and of course the railroads were very important to that matter. Now, when Heydrich was murdered in May of 1942, 4 months later, the Gestapo ordered out of Prague on Czechoslovakia a wave of terror of Jews surviving in Europe. But it didn't bother Simon Wiesenthal or his wife. He continued where he was going. And in August of 1942, this was after the final solution, after Heydrich was killed, thousands of Jews were sent from Weil Railroad to their death camp. This is page 28 of his own book. The camps were now set up in Poland, and Wiesenthal watched and looked on helplessly while he had his job at the railroad yard. Now, he may have been helpless, and he may have been a survivor in 1942, but you don't have to be so kindly to the Waffen-SS. Afterwards, he helplessly, in quotes, had this job, and he knew what was going on. It was right under his eyes. And he says, the SS crammed old Jewish women into cars. Some cars were sitting out in the sun for 3 days waiting to get to the camps where they would be exterminated, and they were begging for water and crying. And one of those in this wagon of cars waiting to go was his own mother, his 63-year-old mother. He never saw her again. She died at Belzec concentration camp, and he worked at the railroad yards. But it gets worse. When he escapes, they give him another job. When he has lists of the top Gestapo and their torturers, they commend him and promote him. It gets worse. We're just barely warming up to Wiesenthal. So his mother gets shot by the Ukrainians, and she dies at the camp. And his mother-in-law died. So the Nazis, as I say, killed his mother and killed his mother-in-law, and the brother-in-law and his wife's, his stepfather, his mother's husband, second husband, are killed in Siberia, but the others are killed by the Germans, and certainly millions then were being killed by the Germans. In September of 1942, most of his family are dead. He thought all the Jews would be killed, but he wanted to save his wife. September of 42. He's going to meet up with her 3 years later. But he had friends in the Polish underground inside the railroad repair works, so he arranged for her to get freedom and leave the job where she's working. He had freedom at work. His account says he could go into town as a technician. He had friends in the town, and he was drawing plans of the railroad junctions for the leaving the town out of Lwów, and where the trains would go, where they could be blown up and sabotaged in case when they were going off to the camps where the people would be killed. So he asked a favor and said that he would turn over the drawings of the railroad plans, but maybe the history of Germany and Poland is that the tracks were blown up. I'm not really sure they were, and I don't remember reading that much about the resistance. But he had friends outside the camp, and he smuggled his wife, Sila, to a man named Zielinski, Zielinski. And he got her out of the railroad yards and out of the repair works, and then she was taken to an apartment, and then another person, an architect from a construction firm he knew, concealed her as his sister, and she stayed in a house in Lubin where she took care of the children. But the shocking thing is that when she leaves in 1944, when the war is just about over, and he's near Krakow, Poland, where she is, in 1945, he says he wanted to get to her through the underground in the position he's in, and we'll go into it in detail later. It would be impossible. How would he know, after traveling in and out of these concentration camps as a Jew, who would possibly be housing her 3 years later? But believe me, the punchline is that she does surface, and she's back with Simon Wiesenthal, and they're happy ever after, and that she lived right in Krakow, Poland, while all the Jews were being exterminated. Massive deportments and intense hatred of the Jews for this area. She's protected, and when she gets a warning the Gestapo is coming where she lived, she got out of the way and returned back to her hometown, and Simon went there to say goodbye to her. And she made a deal with these friends. She'd go to Warsaw and stay with a certain friend, and he would trade the maps. So she's on her way, and as I say, they do meet up later. Now, he stays at the railroad yard, and he describes it in page 29 that it was an island of sanity in a sea of madness. This is in 1942. The late Heydrich orders were kill all the Jews. The trains are pouring in with people from France and Germany and Holland. The railroad yard should certainly be one of the most disgusting and sickening places with the masses of humanity. And he calls the railroad yard an island of sanity in a sea of madness. Can you imagine this being the central point where trains come and go with cattle cars of human beings? And he refers to it as sanity in a sea of madness. Now, he had a friend there, as I say, this Heinrich Gunhardt, who took a liking to him, and 50 German officials who he said behaved correctly to the Poles and Jews. They behaved correctly. And he had another friend, Adolf Kohlratz, Kohlratz, who was Wiesenthal's superior, like Mr. Gunhardt, and he described him as a exceptionally decent man. And they were so friendly with him that they gave him two pistols to keep in his desk. And Wiesenthal could go in and out of town. This is a Jew working at the railroad yards, the yards where he's seen his mother and hundreds and thousands of others shipped out. And he has his own pistol, and he goes in and out of town, and he has sanity in this town, in this sea of madness. Now, in this particular account of his life, he goes from September 1942, where he's at the railroad yard, and he's at a work camp, where his wife is with him, and she walks away, and he never says they looked for her. They never said that she had a job that she was missing that day. You know, missing Jews, you'd go to the husband and certainly yank his ears and legs or take him to the firing squad. And it seems no one at the railroad yard misses his wife at all. And then at bottom of page 29, it follows right the two pages right one after the other. It jumps Adolf Hitler's birthday in April 43. And it doesn't tell you anything about what Wiesenthal saw or did October, November, December of 42, January, February, March, April of 43. Now, the Nazis started going underground in this time period from January to April 43. There's 6.5 months that have passed where he has these very good friends. He has his own gun. He can go in and out of the town. He knows where his wife is in Poland because he's going to try and reach her at that place a little later. He's not punished that she walks away, and it's not too important. And on Hitler's birthday, as I said before, he is painting swastikas, happy birthday, Adolf Hitler. It's April the 20th, and they're decorating the camp. And Simon is up at dawn painting the swastikas, and the SS is going to have a celebration at the railroad yard. So Wiesenthal and two Jews are painting signs in quotes, "We love our Führer." Okay, now a man named Dyga, D-Y-G-A, from Silesia, took Wiesenthal and the two Jews away. They were taken to another concentration camp. This is his third camp, 2 miles away. And the SS guards want to celebrate Hitler's birthday, and they're mad about the defeat in Stalingrad 2 months earlier. So they round up these Jews and take them to the workshop in an area called the Hose. And the hose is 6 or 7 feet wide, a corridor. And there's a sand pit at the end, and it's separated from the other installations. And they put a table there, and they're going to shoot everybody at the edge. The hose is synonymous with death. No one who goes to the hose ever comes back alive. It's between two corridors of barbed wire fence, he describes on page 31. And they take 20 men and some women, and they're waiting to be killed. And Wiesenthal assumes that he will be killed because among them, again, are professors, teachers, lawyers and doctors, and a few camp intelligentsia. And the SS is going to shoot them to celebrate the Führer's birthday. And the SS men appear, led by a man named Mr. Kauser, K-A-U-Z-E-R, with a submachine gun. And the ditch is 6 feet deep and 1,500 feet long. They take off their clothes. He's naked. And dead bodies are inside, and then sand is filled, and then more Jews are there. Wiesenthal has his clothes off, and the truck drives them. There's 38 men and 6 women on a truck. They go to the hose. They form a single row at the rim of the cockpit, and Kauser takes his machine gun, and he hears the crying and the dying, and then he hears the gun, like Mark Lane hears the guns going off down in Guyana, Jonestown, and they're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He shoots and kills, and then a voice says, "Wiesenthal, This happened before. It's going to happen again. I've got to finish this because we're going to run out of time in a minute. But it happens again. Wiesenthal, he snaps to his attention. He's stark naked. An SS man from the Waffen-SS named Koller, K-O-L-L-E-R, tells Wiesenthal to follow him, and they go with Mr. Kauser, the executioner. Kauser came to kill 44 people. He pulls Wiesenthal from the group. 43 die, and Wiesenthal is protected. The others are killed, and he's told to get dressed, and he's delivered to Mr. Kohlratz, his boss at the repair works, and he's put back at the railroad signs painting, "We love the Führer," and the others are in the ditch. And they say, "We need Wiesenthal to paint our signs." And he goes back to the camp to his friends. And they left him. His wife had been taken off safely where he knew she would be after the war. He visualized, you know, they would be killed. This is what he says. But always somebody at that hour says, "Wiesenthal, well, wouldn't you shape up after they call your name?" So he has these people, no matter who the killer is or what the reason, he goes with them and he lines up. Now, I'll go back next week. I'll continue on the story of Simon Wiesenthal. This is favor number 7 or 8. We can add them up and go on to the next favors and how he's constructed and reconstructed after the war and travels with the Waffen-SS. Lives with him. He's the only Jew in a Waffen-SS hospital. He gets double food rations. He is coddled. He is protected. They think that he will keep these lists. He's caught with a list of guards, and he's promoted and helped and saved. I'll continue next week. The hour is up, but I do want to go on the story of Simon Wiesenthal, but there's no time now. So I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Bressel. We'll do part 2 on Wiesenthal next week.